Welcome to Everything Scary. My name is Lynn, and I'm here with my co-host, local celebrity. sorry, international celebrity.
Thank you.
Matt McLean.
Hello, hello.
Every Tuesday, we release a new episode, mostly true crime, but we've also been known to cover a pandemic, a haunting, a super mad, super strong chimpanzee. We'll cover anything and everything scary. Please rate us 5 stars and join us on Instagram at Everything Scary Pod. Here we go. So, how are you?
I am good. How are you, dear?
Oh, you know, I'm fantastic. I've been at a Mexican restaurant all day.
So, I believe, let me just get the dictionary here. Yep, that is called your best life. That is living your best life by the book, my friend.
Are you still sick? You sound good.
I'm recovering. What day is it today? Saturday? I've had it for about a week, maybe in a day.
Okay. And you know, before that, when I used to listen to Fresh, I would always hear you when you were sick.
Yeah.
And you were noticeably sick.
Yes.
And you were also really whiny. I've never heard anyone. Like, it sounded like something really serious happened.
Yes. I loved it.
I wanted to thank some of our Patreons, first of all.
Let's do it.
We've got some new ones.
Welcome to the party.
We have some free listeners as well.
Welcome.
Which is like a thing that Patreon does now. So I think that they can like view all of the things that we're doing, but they can't actually listening. They can't listen to it.
Oh, so it's okay.
Like, I mean, we just need to coax them in a little bit.
Yeah,
more.
Come on.
The water's fine.
Yeah.
So our new listeners are Lily S.
Lily.
Adrian P. Leah G. Amy. Anna. And I wanted to say also, if you guys haven't joined our Patreon-only Facebook group, please do.
Yes. A ton of fun. A lot of Hanson content.
So much Hanson content.
A lot of OJ jokes when he passed away.
Yeah,
too.
Now we're
they
kinda,
were going
we're,
good.
We're dwindling on
yeah,
that
Yeah, we've
one.
Slowed down.
Yeah, we've slowed down on,
on
OJ.
Her OJ content.
And I also, like I said, I wanted to read one of our reviews that we came in, and it's, how would you pronounce this? Write it down.
All right. Yes.
L-I-N.
Yeah.
M-A-W-E.
Lin-Ma?
Okay, Lin-Ma.
Lama, yeah.
So they wrote, I usually do not listen to podcasts that do stories that I've already heard, but I will always listen to Lynn telling a story to Matt and making him feel uncomfortable. His reactions are priceless. I love their humor and chemistry. It feels like hanging out with friends.
Aw, that's awesome.
Well, Lin-Ma, you're in for a treat today because he is about to get super uncomfortable.
What'll you hang out with us today?
People are like, you sound like, it sounds like hanging out with my friends. I'm like, do you want to hang out real though? Like,
I have no friends. I know you have a dog and kids.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have time for friends.
I have a few.
Yeah.
I mean, like they're like penciled in though.
It's I gotcha. Like, yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. Love you guys.
Oops. I dropped my pen. I'm sorry. Oh, so, can I give a shout out real quick to
course.
Toronto's PWHL team, our professional women's team.
Okay.
I saw their first playoff game on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
The Barn, insane. It was awesome. Barn is an arena term, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Where they host hockey games.
Whoa.
So it was a pretty big deal, and it was kind of cool because you obviously expect to see a pro women's hockey game.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of young girls there with their jerseys that are so big because they don't have their pads on and like the little pink signs. And like,
how old are they?
The
19... 18 years old?
The players?
Yeah.
They're from 18 to like 40 maybe.
40?
Maybe 35.
Oh, damn it.
Something like that. But it's like the NHL for the women. And one of the cool things that was, so obviously a lot of females there, but there was a ton of like bros.
Really?
Yeah. Like with jerseys and face paint and like drinking and yelling. Yeah. Like there for hockey.
Really?
Yeah, it
That's
was
awesome.
Awesome.
I'm happy to hear that, actually. Yeah. You really just think most guys kind of think it's a joke when it's women's sports.
Yeah.
Why were you there?
So I've kind of been following
the
league
the whole
for a
team.
followed it for a little bit, the league, and then I have friends that are big fans of women's hockey, and they're like, we have a ticket to the first playoff game. I'm like, oh my God, I am down.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So we got one more victory over Minnesota, and then we'll face, I think it's...
Minnesota?
Boston and Montreal.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can do a Boston accent,
oh,
too.
Oh, Minnesota. Oh, something weird? One of the major sponsors? Ozempic.
Shut the fuck up.
Now, all things equal, it is a big sponsor, the Toronto Blue Jays and the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I believe the Raptors. All things equal. However, from an optics standpoint, it is just a little odd to see
Truthfully, it's a little odd to see Ozempic being a sponsor to any of those things.
The big thing is,
I don't think they're hurting for money.
It is a diabetes medication.
Mm-hmm. Is my sister's diabetic. Say. She's not on it.
Meanwhile, it's always like, ask your doctor if Ozempic is for you. And yeah. They always show a certain type of person.
I don't know how much you have to weigh, but I try. here I am, like, trying to, you know, fuck Ozempic. Anyways, I tried to get it.
Yeah.
And I even, like, I put, like, 20 pounds on top of what I actually do weigh, and they still said I didn't weigh enough. And I was like, I don't think that's right, because all the housewives are on it, and they look great.
That is true. Now, that is the States, and they do have concierge doctors.
Like, they're like, which are have like, a seat. Can I rub your feet?
No, it's more like, what?
I don't know.
It's more like, I think you mean creep. Okay. I think you're thinking creep. No, they like text them. They're like, hey, listen, I have the flu. All right, here's I'll come over with a shot of B12. Yeah, then they pay like thousands of dollars per visit.
Huh. Mm. Okay, well.
Pretty crazy.
I know, right?
Yep.
So the case we're going to go into today, also pretty crazy.
Love it.
Trigger warning for everything.
I mean, I hate it.
Every fucking thing you can think of.
All of them?
All of them.
Okay.
This is a Stephen Stainer case. So a lot of you probably will know this case. I think this is one of the biggest cases of all time in the true crime world. So there's going to be a lot of kid stuff. But that said, normally telling kid stuff episodes, it's really hard for me to get through them. Mm-hmm. This case is so fucking interesting. It's going to blow your mind.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
So I'm going to dive right in because there's so much to get into.
Strap it in. I got my pen. I got my pad of paper.
Buckle up.
I'm buckled.
Click. So I've tried, you know, I listen to all these podcasts and I watched all these documentaries and I always try to think of like a unique way to tell a story. Mm-hmm. But because there's so fucking much that goes into this story, chronologically is the best way I can possibly do it.
All right.
So here we go. This whole case is going to revolve around one family, and that is the Stainer family.
Sounds about right.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense because of the title, right?
I was hooked.
So we're going to start off with Stephen Stainer. Stephen was the third child born to Kay and Delbert, who went by Del because of obvious reasons. The oldest was Carrie. I'm going to say, go ahead and remember that name.
All right.
The second was a girl named Cindy. And after Stephen, their parents would have two more daughters named Jody and Corey. In their early childhood, the family, who was deeply religious, they were part of the Mormon community, and they would drive quite a distance twice a week to attend church. And it was actually said that the children, like all five children, enjoyed going to church.
Which is a very small family in the Mormon community.
No, fair enough.
Nope. They're like... amateurs. You only have five?
It's because his name was Delbert. So they lived on a 20-acre almond farm, which...
How are almonds?
Thank you.
What? Like, how... Is it a tree?
I fucking have a bush?
I bet it's in the dirt.
Is it an animal that just walks by and...
poops them out? I don't know. Almonds are poops?
My dad always used to... You know, what's it called? What's the ice cream that's called?
Ice cream. Vanilla.
Whatever.
Haagen-Dazs.
It's the one that's got the little like almonds and then little chunks of...
Moose tracks.
Sure. Yeah, that's what. Nice. And my dad used to tell me that was moose shits. My dad, I think we've already gotten into it.
He's awesome.
He's
good at forming adulthoods for children. He's good at contributing to mental health.
Yes, totally. Mental health. I like wine because of my dad. So, they lived on this almond farm, which was near Snelling, California. And in nearly every source, it was said that Stephen, he had a dog, Daisy, and they would follow his father around constantly. Aww. Anything that Del was doing, Stephen was in his shadow. And he liked it. Like, he was like, this is his boy. He's showing him the ropes. They would go hunting together, fishing. They would do their thing. But one day, it's said that it was in the washroom. I don't know what was happening in the washroom. Mm. Hopefully, they were just washing their hands. Nobody was using the bathroom. I think that's a one-person job. I don't know. But when Stephen was by his father's side, Del dropped to the ground out of nowhere, and Stephen was absolutely terrified. He thought that his father had suffered a heart attack.
Oh, geez.
And he ran to get help. Del was taken to the hospital, and thankfully, it wasn't his heart. He had a herniated disc in his back, which... was something that he actually required surgery for. And after he would heal, you know, they weren't really able to tend to this 20-acre farm like he used to.
I got a herniated disc.
It's a slip disc.
Yeah.
So this family, you know, they had to make a huge shift in their life. So they moved into a 1,220-square-foot three-bedroom home. It's not a big place.
Okay, good. Thank you. Because I have no idea what a square foot is, what a room should be when it comes to square. People put those numbers out, and I try to have just a straight, just like, I hear you, but like, I accept it, and I'm not questioning it.
Or if they're like fancy and they're like, yeah, you know, it's like a 7,000 square foot home. You're like, just be like, whoa.
Yeah,
just
I'm like.
Every now and then be like, or ooh.
All those feet are square? Cool. Do you have an indoor swimming pool? Like, that's an apartment. Oh, yeah, that's what I meant.
You just said 900 square feet. What's going on here?
Yeah, that's right. That's almost 1,000. That's pretty epic. You're doing pretty good.
So they had to move into this house, which, yes, it's a very small house.
Mm-hmm. Modest.
Modest, yes, especially with five children.
Oh, God. Well, there won't be a sixth.
So they moved into this house. It was located at 1655 Betty Street in Merced, California. The house is still there today. It was just purchased for $280,000 in 2023.
What is the thing if it's your street name?
Your street name, it's either usually the last thing you ate or the color of your underwear.
And your street
name? Or your first pet's name. There's a whole bunch of different ones.
Yeah, that's
whatever, true. Whatever sounds best at that point in time.
I was thinking like Betty Stainer. Stainer Betty.
Ooh.
No,
Stainer sounds like you have dirty underpants.
That is.
1,000% Betty Stainer underpants.
Betty Stainer.
So, sadly, Daisy, the dog, who was a collier? Collar?
Collie. I think it's a collie, like a border collie?
It's definitely a collie.
Oh, yeah. Is there an R in it? Yeah, there is. Collier. There is. Is it a collar?
The stupidest.
Does the dog have a collar? Is what you're asking, I think.
Totally, yeah, yeah. So it was a collie. I knew that. Yeah. I was just saying it had a collar on.
That's right.
So it wasn't used to living on such a small piece of land, and it would go in the backyard and just do circles. So, you know, they kind of had to give away the dog to a family friend because it had too much energy. Those dogs are, like, I know anything about those dogs.
No, I think in like Australian shepherds, maybe, and border collies. Yeah, they're like, wow, you got to walk them like 3 or 4 times a day.
Well, my dog, we have our new puppy now. His name is Graham. He's the love of my life.
Super adorable.
But our last dog, Poppy, she was part collie and part hound. And
oh, wow.
I used to ride my bike with her and we would go for like 7-8 kilometers. And she was just like, I was more gassed than she was. When she was like, all right.
You have a bike, Mom. You what the hell?
With a basket with water in it.
Yeah, put those cigarettes in it, Mom. Jesus.
So, you know, they made the best decision for the dog and they gave it away. Naturally, though, this devastated Stephen. Like, not only was his dad kind of down for the count, he then lost his dog. So it's like, Stephen was used to just walking around this humongous farm with his dad and his dog.
And the dog.
Like, now nobody was there and he's stuck in this smaller house on this smaller piece of property. So Stephen began to get really upset. At this point in time, he was 7. So he's a little kid. Mm-hmm. There were times at school, which he went to Charles Wright Elementary School, that his teachers would have to call home just because Stephen would have a bad day and he'd just start crying.
Oh, all right.
So, yeah. So all of the Stainer kids were supposed to walk home together, but Stephen would get out of class before the older kids. And he was like, fuck this.
Later.
So he would just go ahead and walk home on his own. And sometimes he would get distracted because he's 7.
That's right.
And he would end up playing with like another school friend or, you know, he'd just play ball by himself, just a ball on the sidewalk. He's like, yep.
Yep.
This is what I'm doing
7-year-old doing 7-year-old things.
Yeah, exactly.
See a stick.
So December 1st of 1972, when he was 7, like I just said, Stephen got caught up playing ball on his own, and he didn't make it home before his parents started to worry. And when he did get home, his dad was pissed.
Yeah.
Sources were split on if Dell actually spanked him or got physical with him. But, you know, it's the 70s, first of all.
So, yeah.
So, probably. But either way, Stephen was disciplined for not getting home on time. And for that reason, when Stephen once again didn't show up at home at a decent time on Monday, December the 4th, the next school day, Dell and Kay were irritated, but they weren't worried right away. They were like, it's just Stephen doing Stephen things.
Damn it, Stephen.
When the time went on, though, and it was nearly dinner, and Stephen still hadn't walked through the door, their irritation once again went from annoyance to panic, and they called the local police. Sadly, this time, it was not that Stephen had gotten caught up playing with friends, and he wasn't just playing ball alone. Stephen had been walking when a white Buick had pulled up to the seven-year-old.
Uh-oh.
The man who got out had church pamphlets, and his name was Irvin Edward Murphy. He asked Stephen if he or his mother might have something that they wanted to donate to the church. And Stephen said he didn't. He's like, I'm seven.
I just have my apple
core in my bag. What do you mean? But he's like, my mom usually does. Like, she loves to donate stuff. Mm-hmm. So he said he was only a few blocks from his home and that if they wanted to follow him, he could go into his home and ask her. Irvin told Stephen that he and the driver of the Buick, who he introduced as Reverend Parnell, would be happy to drive him to his house. At first, he declined because it was so close and it didn't make any sense for him to get into the car.
All right.
But the man was persistent, and Stephen, having come from a religious home.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And seeing these two men who were from the church, mm-hmm. one's a reverend.
In the cloth, he'd be like, oh, safe space.
Yeah, 1,000%. He didn't recognize that he could be in danger. So after a bit of convincing, he was like, okay, fine. I don't know why this is such a big deal. I'm going to hop in the car. And he got in the car where he was introduced to Reverend Parnell. The three of them drove along until they passed Stephen Street. They would have needed to take the right-hand turn onto Betty Street, but instead they kept heading straight, which was east on Highway 140, headed out of Merced.
Did he recognize them as like who they were, or just members of the church because of the gear?
He didn't know who they were. No,
right,
no.
But he's just like, hey, I've seen this
uniform. And the guy had the pamphlets.
Yeah, okay.
And he was saying, like, you know, we're just looking for donations. Yeah, this is Reverend so-and-so. Like, it was a lot of verbal confirming who they were. So, you know, at which time, after they passed his street, he spoke up and he informed the men that they had missed his turn. But instead of turning back, the Reverend told Stephen not to worry. He said he would call his mom and ask if Stephen could spend the night once they reached a phone. Because that seems normal.
This is the 70s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a bunch of sleepovers with dudes.
Just like church sleepovers. Hey, come on. Nothing going on.
Here's the deal. I'm gonna let the cat out of the bag early on. This guy's not a fucking reverend.
Maybe not. I just love that that's the outfit you pick. Like, and now we look back, it's the most, like, it's the pedophile uniform, like, on Halloween. It's like.
I don't even think he was wearing, nowhere it stated that he was wearing a uniform. They just said he was a reverend, and a seven-year-old believed him.
I'm thinking he's got that little white collar thing.
Yeah, that's like, Catholic priests.
Oh, I don't know the difference between any of all of them.
I imagine that collar would be really uncomfortable, though. Like, wouldn't you get chafing? Because it's a whole white piece of plastic.
Yeah, I think you're not getting laid. Chafing around your neck, the least of your issues with any area chafing or getting irritated.
Okay. Wow. I feel like I'm talking to a angry priest.
Maybe they can get, I don't know how it works. I don't know which churches are which.
I'm Catholic and I don't think.
Like, I'm Catholic and I always hit on the priest and they never.
I'm like, what's up?
Oh, hey. Can I get an extra cookie?
Okay. So, you know, Stephen remembered at this point, like, the reverend's like, I'm going to go to a payphone. I'm going to call your mom. No biggie.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I don't know how I have your mom's number. Because I just asked her seven-year-old if he had done. Why wouldn't you just call the adult woman and that? Okay, you know what? Mm-hmm. There's no logic to this, and I can't expect a seven-year-old to see any logic in it either. So Stephen remembered at this point that he was feeling strange, but he wasn't overly frightened. He was just kind of like,
this is weird.
Yeah, this is weird. Mm-hmm. So soon they arrived at their destination, which was a cabin in Cathy's Valley, California. Unknown to the three of them, Stephen's maternal grandfather actually lived within walking distance.
Jackpot.
Unfortunately, the family had a falling out with the grandfather. Damn. And It was said that even if Stephen ran into him, it was unlikely that he would recognize him.
It's crazy.
This grandfather, now I didn't include this in the script, but later on. Like,
then you shut your mouth.
You shut your fucking filthy mouth
right
now. Stick
to the goddamn script, so help me God.
But no, they said that he said, and this was in their court testimony that happens later on that I will explain, but the grandfather said that they should have been happy that Stephen was no longer in their family because that was one less mouth to feed.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I can't understand why they had, like,
is this Dill's dad?
No, this is Kay's dad.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
I don't understand why they had a strained relationship with it. He seems great.
Wow. What a, like, compassion comes to mind.
Like, friendly.
Yeah.
Sweet and friendly. So, Kenneth, which is Kenneth Parnell, who is Reverend Parnell, he would present Stephen with a big bag of shitty toys, like dollar store toys. But, you know, seven-year-olds get excited over everything. And he was going through all the toys, and he would pick out certain ones and hold them up, and he would say, like, can I give this one to Cindy, or can I give this one to Carrie? Like, he would hold up.
Oh, that's nice.
And he was, like, thinking of his siblings. So
not me. I'd be like, can I have them all? I want all of them.
You know who would like this? My sister, Lindsay. But I want them. Yeah.
You know, like, this is who? My sister, Matthew.
So the first night in the cabin, Reverend Parnell, who was actually just, you know, old child pedophile Kenneth Parnell.
Just a guy, yeah.
Just a fucking, I don't even know if we can call him a guy. But yeah, he would sexually assault Stephen that very first night. After telling him that he had gotten in touch with his parents and they had given him the okay to stay over with this fucking weird man in this secluded area. Now, the man's friend, who, if you remember, was the one that lured Stephen into the car.
The brochures.
Yes. So that's Irvin Murphy. He was a coworker of Kenneth's. They both worked at Yosemite Lodge. Okay. At any point during this script, because I have to say the word Yosemite 550,000 times, mm-hmm. but every time I was writing it out in my head, I would go, Yosemite.
Oh, I love it. That's actually what it is. And you know what? I will not, if you say it either way, I'm not going to say it. God, I love Yosemite.
That's how my brain did it. And I was like, oh boy, I need it.
Sounds like a mineral.
Yeah, Yosemite.
I got some, what kind of ring is that? Oh my God, he got me a Yosemite. No, he did not. That's my birthstone. Oh my God, he's so thoughtful.
So he worked at the Yosemite Lodge, and people who knew Irvin said that he was easily manipulated and possibly had gone undiagnosed for some sort of, you know, maybe he had autism, something, he was on the spectrum. But they said he was a good man. And if you asked him to borrow something and he didn't have it, he would go and borrow it from someone else and then give it to the person that needed it.
Oh, nice.
He was a really good guy. So we would later find out that Kenneth fooled him as well. He said that he was becoming a reverend. And on that day, when they were out driving, Ken had given him a big sob story about how children living in this area were impoverished and poor. And they, I think that's just a cinema, that's the same word, isn't it? Impoverished and poor.
Yes, yes. Well, I think impoverished means like you are in
an impoverished.
Yeah, I think poor, you can be poor temporarily, like after, like,
yeah, fair enough.
2 days before pay. I'm like, oh yeah, hello. Hello, darkness, my old friend. Oh,
no. So Matt watches the Trolls apparently a couple days before payday. So, you know, Kenneth told Irvin that he wanted to take one of these
kids,
boys that was, you know, they didn't have all the finer things in life, and he would raise the child as his son.
Oh, shit.
So that the child could have a better life than they would have living with their parents.
Wow, it's further than I thought. I was thinking he was just going to be like, yeah, it's just, we show them like the, like a, like, you know, Tim Hortons camp, like how you take kids from the city and you take them into the country.
No.
Wow, way so, worse.
That night, even though Irvin was not in the room, he was in another room, but when the assault happened, he knew what was going on, and he was horrified. Mm. But Kenneth simply told him that if he wanted to turn him in, then he would also be incriminating himself. So,
uh-oh. Shit, and he's probably like,
oh, it's still going.
Oh, cut that out. Hello, check one, two.
So, yeah, he told him, you know, if you want to turn him in, that's fine. But you're also going to go to jail with me. So yeah.
Guess who drove me there?
Exactly. Who got out of the car and literally lured the kid in. So Who was Kenneth Parnell? Well, buckle up, because this piece of trash is going to make you want to smash things. Kenneth Parnell was born into this world evil.
Oh.
Some will say that there's, you know, mental illness involved and that he needed help. Mm-hmm. And I can appreciate all of those things. But as I'm writing this script, and I've just come off of, you know, an entire week of reading and hearing things about this piece of garbage, and it is my opinion that he was a monster right out of the gate.
Really? Even before he started working at Yosemite?
Don't do it, Matt. It's going to fuck with me. You don't know how long the script is. So, you know, if there's anyone listening and who listens to the entire episode, because that's pertinent to this whole thing, but and they still think that, you know, maybe there was something good about him. Maybe you're judging him too hard. He could have been a sick individual. Fucking DM me, because I think he's a piece of shit all through and through. So this garbage person entered the world on September 26th of 1931. And on that day, the world became a worse place. He was born in Texas, and his dad abandoned him when he was 8 years old. Was it because his father tried to sage the family home and his young son burst into flames? I can't say for sure.
We just don't have, it was so long ago, we just don't have.
But probably.
Can I confirm 100%? No, but I can do pretty damn close.
I would give you one of my kids if that wasn't the same. So after his father hightailed it out of there, his mom took him and his half-siblings and moved to California, where she opened up a boarding house, which I guess she was like doing B&Bs before they were.
Oh, before they were cool. Yeah,
she was like, oh, started that.
Hey, come on.
So in a book called I Know My First Name is Steven, it is said that Kenneth was molested at the age of 13, but he has only ever denied that. He's never once said that that was confirmed. Truthfully, okay. I don't know where the author got that information from, because Kenneth's never confirmed it. I don't know. But
it's not something that you'd come forward with if you're not Kenneth.
I mean, sometimes right? when you look at certain people and be like, wow, that person's so evil, they must have had something horrific happen to them. And Kenneth's like, no, everything was fine. I'm just the scum of the earth.
Was Dahmer evil, or was he like a product of an environment?
I think Dahmer was very mentally ill.
Sorry, I know. I'm sorry. I mean, I know he was evil, but I mean, was he a good guy or not?
You know what? I'm going to say.
No, but did he have like contributing factors to his evilness? Like,
you'd have to let me really dive into
it. Oh, yeah.
Don't just fucking put me on the spot.
I'm sorry. Don't just throw with a D-man at me.
That's a huge fucking pill to swallow. So.
Glad you said pill, not like food.
Finger, toe. So at the age of 19 in 1951, this piece of garbage used a fake sheriff's badge to lure an 8-year-old child, where he abducted and raped him. Wow. He would later claim that the reason he had done this was because his wife was pregnant and he needed an outlet.
That's awful.
That's
Jesus.
Keep your fucking excuse to yourself then.
Yeah, just say nothing.
Just say nothing at all. So he was sentenced to spend an indefinite time, an amount of time in a psychiatric hospital, which I guess was kind of a thing back then, because remember we covered the silent twins, Jennifer and June Gibbons. And remember they were like, well, if you guys aren't going to fucking talk to anybody, you're going to just go into the psychiatric hospital and then like figure it out.
Yep.
We'll see you if we see you. But at the psychiatric hospital, they would diagnose Kenneth as a sexual psychopath.
All right.
Which is a fucking bold title.
Yeah, no shit. Like back then.
Yeah, you're a sexual psychopath.
Wow.
So after he was placed in the hospital, he was only there for a little while, and he was actually able to break out.
Oh, Jesus.
So he was out for 5 months. And then he was found and they put him back in the hospital. But apparently they felt that that break out somehow reformed him, because instead of putting him back in there indefinitely, they sentenced him to 5 years. They were like, you know what? That fresh air really did you good.
We're going to knock off. You know, we gave you for life whenever we see fit. We're going to knock that off.
Because you know what? Honestly, I'm impressed that you got out.
I love they didn't put him in jail. Should we put him in somewhere with the bar? No, hospital.
Yeah.
No, but maybe with the psycho and the sex thing? No, he's fine.
And it's like he's 19, so it's not, he's in a fucking baby. Like,
yeah.
Bye.
Yeah. Was it sexual psychopath?
That's like the name of a fucking heavy metal band.
Yeah. I'm not even a sexual sociopath.
So, you know, apparently after they gave him the 5 years, Kenneth was on good behavior.
For good behavior.
Yeah, they were like,
dude, I fucking knew it.
But
stop it.
He only had that one pesky breakout. Just the one.
Just the one little breakout.
One teensy tiny breakout. Teensy little. So after 3 years, they were like, you know what? Get out of here, you little fucking scamp. 1955, the year my dad was born. You're the Lord. So, you know, and also, like, why would he have to register as a sexual offender? Like, they didn't have the title sexual psychopath, which is what he actually was. So, like, just nothing would be fine.
Yeah, just, that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, however, he was given instructions that he was supposed to attend counseling before he had been paroled. Mm-hmm. He was then arrested again a little bit later on for violation of parole, naturally.
Surprised.
After that, he moved to Utah, and it was not long before he was again arrested in 1960 for larceny and robbery.
Whoa.
But in 1967, Utah was like, okay, here's the deal. If you fucking hightail it out of Utah and then we never have to see your stupid fucking face again, you're good. So Kenneth went back to California, and that's when he got a job at Yosemite and he met Irvin Murphy. And now in December of 1972, he had abducted 7-year-old Steven Stainer.
Did they know that he was out late the Friday before? Like the kidnappers?
He had been watching him for a week.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. He had been watching him for a week, and he had also spoken to a mail carrier who, for some fucking weird reason, knew that Dell had given Steven shit. He had been punished for being out late.
And what? The mail carrier was like, Kathy,
here, weird looking fucking man. So you don't know them? You're sure you don't know them? Okay, good. Then I'll tell you about the family. The little guy's getting in trouble because he is out. And then Dell here, I mean, he's a bit of a fucking hard ass. Like, who the fuck mailman is this? How long are you delivering mail for that you know this stuff?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. So, after a few days of saying that he had called Steven's parents and that they were just granting permission here, left, right, and center for sleepovers, one day Ken went out and he came back and he told Steven that he was now going to be his new dad.
Just like that.
Just like that. He had gone to court. Steven's family had signed over custody to him because money was tight in the Stainer household. And, you know, they simply just couldn't afford him anymore.
Jesus.
And at 7, what are you supposed to think? Especially having just gone through such a life change. They were living on this big farm and Zendel got sick and like they had to get rid of their dog. And it's like so many things are being taken away from him too, mm-hmm. right? So maybe this is the next step. Like,
oh yeah, it makes sense.
We couldn't keep the dog. We couldn't keep the farm. We couldn't keep the house. Like maybe they can't
keep
me.
Steven. Wow.
So Kenneth would tell Steven that his new name was going to be Dennis Parnell, which that's a terrible name.
Yeah.
For some reason, he did keep Steven's middle name, which was Gregory, and he kept his date of birth correct, which was April 18th. I don't know why he kept some things, not the other things, but
I mean, it's easier to remember.
I guess. Maybe, yeah. From this point on, naturally, this disgusting piece of shit literally would rape and sexually assault Steven constantly. And just to be perfectly clear, like the Stainer family did not.
Yes. Yes. Like this is a missing person.
Yes.
This is a kidnapping.
And they are fucking devastated. I mean, everyone deals with grief in their own different way. But Steven's father, Delbert, was inconsolable. He was driving himself fucking crazy, wondering where his kid could be. He had the guilt.
Yeah, I was going to say, just 3 days. Himself. Yeah.
Yeah. 3 days before the disappearance, he had punished his son for playing ball before coming home. There's absolutely no way that he could have ever known, right? But as a parent, I would feel guilty too. Like one of the last interactions you had with your kid was that. Of course, the parents were instantly suspected, and they were asked to take a polygraph test. And for some reason, Kay actually said, okay, we'll take the polygraph test, but I think my dad should also take a member of Friendly Pants.
Yeah.
So he took one as well. Everybody passed. Dell actually went right to the grandfather's house, So he was literally within 100 yards from Stephen being held captive at that point in time.
Wow.
But nobody knew. As months and then years went by, Dell in particular would pull away from the rest of his family. He would say things to Carrie, who was his oldest son, like his real son had been taken.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Sometimes he would just stand in the doorway to Stephen's room and openly sob. Now, this man is well within his rights to be a total wreck. Lord knows I would be.
Yeah.
I would be a fucking puddle. But Stephen and Carrie had shared a room before Stephen's disappearance. So Carrie had front row tickets to his father's fucking despair.
Shit. And then saying the favorite. And
yes. Yikes. In all of the pictures that you will see of Carrie, he's wearing a hat because he suffered from a condition called trichotillomania, which is a condition where you pull out your own hair. But in Carrie's case, he wasn't so much pulling it directly out. He was just rolling in a spot and he was giving himself bald patches on his head.
Oh, really? Yes. Just kind of like rubbing the skin?
Yeah, like he would just...
As like a nervous, like a stressor kind of thing?
Yeah. My boss, her little guy, is 7. And he used to lie in bed with them and he would rub a spot on her head like this over and over again. And so her husband, who's also a denturist that I work with, he one day when she wasn't there, he was like, yeah. So he's like, she came up to me and she was like, hey, am I starting to lose hair from where he's, you know, rubbing it so much? And her husband was like, no, not at all. And he's like, Lynn, there's a fucking bald spot.
Good answer. Good husband move. Yep. That's how you do it.
So this is obviously a nervous thing. He's got anxiety, right?
Yeah.
What is also something that should be known is that Carrie has high functioning autism.
Okay.
So at that time, it was known as Asperger's. So emotionals were, you know, emotions, they were harder for Carrie.
Right.
And to see his father break down regularly must have been overwhelming.
Just awful. Yes. Yeah.
So when they would go on family outings, this is straight from the father, Dell. He said when they would go on family outings, it would be combing through woods and fields looking for a trace of Stephen.
Oh, like that was their...
That was their going out as a family time. They would be searching for their deceased brother.
I mean, and then you think as a parent, if anybody ever take my kid ever, I'd search every day.
Yeah.
Right? You can't really blame them, but then it's like...
But you're also ruining...
Four
other kids.
You have to live.
But it's like, where's that balance? How do you make that balance?
Yeah, and what kind of piece of shit would ever be like, listen, you probably shouldn't be looking for your kid.
Exactly.
You know, shouldn't you be? Yeah, it's weird. It's weird.
It's there's no right
awful,
answer.
Awful. No, there's not.
The only person that's to blame here is this fucking disgusting animal who willed it further into, because he's dead now, so.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So Dell said that 5 years into Stephen being missing, something happened that made him lose hope that his son would ever return. Now, he said this in an interview that I watched, and he didn't state exactly what the event was that made him lose hope, but he did say that it was something. Like, it wasn't just like general, you know, time had passed, and he was like, it's been 5 years. No, he said something happened that made him waver.
Really?
And I don't know what it is.
Do we know, and did I miss... what Stephen's fate is right now?
Stephen is alive and well, getting sexually assaulted and raped.
For years?
Years.
In this cabin?
They move around a lot.
Oh, shit. Really?
Yes. Yeah.
God.
So we will get further into where Stephen was this whole time. But the oldest daughter, Cindy, would say that her parents were so destroyed that the remaining children... essentially were on their own, and they just did everything they could to stay out of their parents' way.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Stephen had been enrolled in school as Dennis Parnell, and they moved around a lot.
Wow.
You know, there was missing posters everywhere.
Right.
And this fucking idiot had dyed his hair. He dyed Stephen's hair, but I mean, this kid had a very defining look.
Right.
He was a very, like, in his older years, like when he was like 14, he was a very strapping young man. Like he was super handsome. They were all a good looking bunch, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But he would take Stephen and he would move. And where they were living was just fucking dingy trailers and like shacks. And A lot of them didn't have electricity. But Stephen was given the freedom to go to school and to have friends. Like, at this point, he's kind of thinking his parents just didn't want him anymore.
Right, because he's not kidnapped. He's adopted.
Adopted, as far as he knows.
In his mind,
yeah. Exactly. So, right. But one day, he was walking home with his friends, and he was very quiet and in his own head. And when his friends asked what was going on with him, he just started crying. And they said, you know, what's going on? What are you doing? And he said, I just want to go home. And they were like, yeah, it's like right up there. It's not that big of a deal, man.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't mean that place. I mean my real home.
Oh, wow.
And a bunch of boys were like, okay.
Wow.
And they didn't really press him for more information because they were uncomfortable with feelings.
That's right. And we would swallow them.
So another time he asked Kenneth if it would be okay if, you know, would Ken let him call his family? Like, he's like, listen, I know you're my dad now, but like, I just want to check in, see if everybody's okay.
Yeah.
And Kenneth told him that it wasn't possible for him to do that because his father actually had a heart attack and passed away. And his mother could not afford to care for all of the kids on her own. So they were all now broken up. The kids had been sent to different places. And he told him he wouldn't even know where to kind of begin to get in touch with any of his family members.
Like, but that's what grooming is, right? Like training, like convincing him of that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I know it's more extreme examples of that, but that essentially is kind
of... I'm sure. You know what? Yeah. I don't know all what goes into grooming, but I'm sure that convincing...
So bizarre. Like, it's brainwashing.
Yes, exactly. Right? But Ken would say, you know, it's no big deal because there's no rules here. Like, we're having a great time, right? He's like, you can have your friends over whenever you want.
There's no rules here. Can I turn the lights on? All right. Well, there's no hydro either.
Ken would buy them, even like these young kids, alcohol.
Of course.
Cigarettes.
Yeah. Porno mags.
So Ken was that overly friendly adult that like always wanted to drink with young kids. Like everybody, there's one of them in every, like you must have known one. Are you one?
Yeah. No, I'm.
You're like, I'm Theo.
Let's tie one on.
Yeah, let's get some blue ribbon. And let's
Abs blue ribbon. Come on, Theo.
So I'm going to show you a picture of this man, too.
Okay.
Okay, but before I do.
Which man? Ken Parnell or
yes, Ken Parnell. Parnell? So what I want you to do.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a visual.
Okay.
Verbally.
A verbal. Okay.
So picture Elmer Fudd.
Okay.
If you knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that Elmer Fudd was a disgusting pedophile.
Got it.
Do you have it?
Yep. Big giant round face.
Okay.
Big butt.
And now I'm
little
gonna...
frame. Shotgun.
Okay. Ready?
Hunter's hat. Yep.
Now I want you to let me know how close this is to what you had in your head.
Okay. Oh my God. What is that the little kid?
That's Steven.
Jesus. Yeah, that's way worse.
Than what I said?
That's all. What a, you know, you should never judge a book by its cover. That book you could judge.
That book is called There's Nothing in Here.
That book is called No Redeeming Factors and Dredge on Society.
Yeah, just burn this book.
And the guy's face.
Isn't he the most disgusting looking person you've ever seen?
Yeah, Jesus.
Like, there's something that you can do. It's maybe not the... Maybe the comb over isn't working for you.
Yeah,
the
comb over's not working. The camo's not a great look. Just a lot of things not really working.
Did you say the kid was not
No, great. The camo. The kid's not a good look.
Well, it isn't. You shouldn't
yeah, you're
have
right.
that
you
kid
shouldn't
beside
have.
You.
You're right. Yeah, kid is not a good look for him.
So, you know, of course, when Steven's friends or Dennis, like everybody knows him as Dennis at this point. But when they would come to the house, Ken would try to also assault these children. One even confronted Stephen about it, and Stephen just replied that that's kind of what his dad did.
Oh, God.
Imagine how quickly you'd lose friends.
No shit.
So he asked this kid. So Stephen was like, yeah, that's just what he does.
Mm-hmm.
Can you please not tell your mom about it, though? And the boy was like, fuck that.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell my mom. And so his mom... called the police.
Yeah.
Because,
you know,
obviously
she's a mom.
So they showed up at Ken's door and he was able to talk them out of any suspicions. He was like, I'm actually a reverend.
Oh my God. they're like, okay, double suspicious.
They're like, he's like, you know, I was just being a little bit hard on the boys. Like, I'm a little bit strict with those rules. And then this little guy wasn't a fan of rules. So that's why he decided to say that I'm a fucking pedophile. And apparently these were blind cops because they couldn't just look just at this man's face and be like, yeah, that fucking checks out.
Trying to look like him.
Reverend?
What church exactly are you a part of?
So, you know, but the walls were closing in a little bit. So Ken was like, time to move again. And of course, I don't need to tell you that, you know, over the years, Stephen's getting older as years work.
Yes. Thank you for explaining time and the passage of thereafter.
So as much as, you know, you'd want this man to slowly, you know, just die, just leave this earth and fucking stop bothering this kid. That's kind of what happened, but it wasn't the way you would want it to happen. Stephen started to get too old for Ken. As he got older, Kenneth started to lose interest in him. And that was really hard for me to get out because it's such a disgusting thing to say. So as Stephen went into his teenage years, he wasn't Ken's ideal type anymore.
Mm-hmm.
At their new place, it again was a dump. There was no electricity. You had to use an outhouse. There was only one bed.
Mm. I wonder who slept in it.
So Stephen would strike up a friendship with a kid who lived like close to them. And that kid had four other siblings. And apparently Kenneth had taken a liking to that child's mother. Her name was Barbara.
It's not like him.
Well, Barbara, too, is an actual ditch pig.
Oh, my God.
So.
Fucking word. I love it. You're amazing.
So when Ken would give her those fucking milky eyes of his, she was putty and those fucking disgusting yellow hands.
Oh, the nicotine-stained two-fingy hands.
Two fingies. Oh. So she left her family naturally, as one would do when they stared into that face.
Mm-hmm.
And she would come over to this one bedroom fucking dump. And she would share a bed with Ken and, quotes, Dennis.
Oh.
Without going into too much detail, because it's fucking vile. And I'm sure you can draw your own conclusions. But Ken would insist that Dennis participate in their sex life. And Barbara, who had a child the same age as Stephen, decided that she was just fine with that.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And she, like, that's his son in her mind, right?
Well, that's his son. And then his best friend is her son.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah. So she's, and he's 11 at this point in time.
Stephen is.
Mm-hmm.
How
do two people like this find each other?
Yes. Like,
I'm thinking it's the outhouse.
Like,
they are lined up. It's a fucking steaming hot day.
Like, there's no Facebook algorithm back then to align you with similar valued pieces of shit.
No, with the outhouse is their algorithm.
That's what it was. It was the algorithm. Jesus. The outhouse.
The outdoor rhythm. So, sadly, Stephen would say that this time period was actually easier on him because Barbara was there to take on some of the assault that would happen to him. Like, it wasn't assault to her. She was consenting, but some of Kenneth's energy would get used up on this fucking pig.
Jesus.
Also, I don't think there is a worse word to call a woman than a pig. So that's like...
What about C?
Yeah.
It's up there.
I can be a C sometimes.
Well,
I don't like, especially like,
not a C, a B tops.
Nah, there's a C.
Really?
There's
like a C, light C.
C minus, like a diet C.
Yeah, a diet C. heavy B, but a diet C.
So after about a year together, these two fucking pieces of shit, something happened with Barbara's ex, and she suddenly had all five of her children back in her custody.
Oh, no.
I know that this story is horrific. And none of it's lost on me at all. But I have to take a second.
Yeah.
And can you imagine six kids and two adults, no electricity and a toilet outside in fucking California? Like, there's no AC. Yeah. It's just all these sweltering people with their fucking stinky poo-poo outside.
Yeah, and there's probably smoking darts in the trailer.
Without question. Right? So, like, I'm sure you don't remember, but our plumbing went on New Year's Day. And once I was able to figure out what a toilet flange was, I drove aimlessly for hours with three kids in the back of my car trying to find anything that was open on New Year's Day so that it could be fixed. And I felt like I should have written a book about like my trials and tribulations that I had to overcome. So like I can't imagine having double the kids and never having indoor plumbing.
Yeah.
It's just and fucking
forever.
Oh, and another part that I didn't even include in here that Barbara didn't want to go to the outhouse anymore. Like, she's a lady. So she was just pissing on the back door.
Wait. Okay. Did she have one of those wee? I don't know. Or is she just squatting on the... Or can you spray it like a cat? Can you spray it? I don't even know how the biology works, really. Just trickles? I know sometimes if you bend over, you can get on your underwear.
What?
Yeah.
That happened to one of your ex-girlfriends?
I did, yeah.
Why would she share that with you?
I was there.
Oh, you watched her pee on herself?
No. I was filming it. No, I was there. We were at like a field party.
You're like, it was in my room.
Yeah. I paid good money for that shit. Yeah, she pulled her underwear up. And her underwear was soaked.
Oh, no, that's so terrible.
I was like, oh. She's like, oh, my God, I'm mortified. And I'm like, oh, I know. Stay over there.
Oh, good. Well, that answers all the questions that were never asked. So, you know, after realizing that the trailer was clearly too tight.
Mm-hmm. And the back started to smell a little like piss for some reason.
This is not supposed to be a funny case. But Kenneth bought an old school bus.
Nice.
That was gutted. And he parked it beside the trailer so the kids had somewhere to stay.
Boy, this guy's really leaning into the pedophile-like tropes, right? Like a priest outfit, now a school bus. Like Jesus. If he gets a white van, this is free Justin Bieber tickets, so help me God.
So, you know, all the kids stayed there, except for one, Stephen.
Mm.
And one day, when Barbara was out, Ken decided...
It was like their addition to their home. You just park a bus there? Hey, we expanded. Hey, did what do you guys expect to be done with renos? I should be pulled out of here in a couple minutes.
So, one day when Barbara was out, Ken decided that he was also going to make a pass at Steven's little buddy, who sadly was also named Kenneth. So that's why I've kind of been avoiding saying his name. They called him Kenny, but it's still a little awful. Confusing. Yeah. So when Barbara returned home, her son, her 11-year-old, told her what had happened. And being mother of the year that she was, she was incensed. And she took her children and left.
No.
Just kidding. I mean, she did leave. She did leave. But it was because she was also having an affair with somebody else. It wasn't because she gave a shit about her kids.
When you write those, are you like, I'm going to get Matt, that fucking idiot. I'm going to reel this dumb in. I'm always like, oh, look at that.
She's great.
Just kidding. She left, but it's worse.
Just aside from pissing up the back of the friggin'. So gross.
Oh.
So, I mean, you know, she was cheating on Kenneth. I can only imagine that you could throw a stone and hit a guy that would be better than the guy with the toilet and the bus outside. So, once again, it was just Ken and Stephen or Dennis. But Stephen just keeps on getting older and older. And that's not what Ken signed on for. So he keeps telling Stephen that he wants to bring in another young child. And even younger than Stephen was when he abducted him. He wants to bring in a 4 or 5-year-old at this time.
Like, bring in, like, to their, like, what the hell?
He's
with
a
this
fucking
kid?
Animal.
Wow.
And he wants Stephen to lure these kids in.
Look, this isn't a consensual, this isn't like urban.
Yeah, I'm not here by choice.
Yeah.
You fucking asshole. So, on a side note, have you ever seen that photo of the father who his son was groomed by his karate instructor, and then they're trying to transport him through the airport.
It's like dad's from like the '80s or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
The dad is in like a phone booth. Like,
that's right. And he just turns around.
Turns around, fucking shoots him and kills him dead.
Yes.
I mean, wouldn't that be great if that would happen to Kenneth?
Yes. Yes, it would.
Thank
be.
You. That guy's a hero in my eyes.
Actually, you know, it'd be good for Kenneth if instead of getting shot in the head, he got shot in like maybe the foot and then a little in the leg and then up in the knee.
And right in the dick. What are you talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Blow that shit up.
Blow that shit. Blow it right in the wiener.
Well, you're fucking bye.
Yep.
So, you know, when it came to Stephen participating in taking another child and having to live with that child, then enduring the same kind of treatment that Stephen had been receiving for years, even at his young age, he was not okay with that. Mm-hmm. Even if it would take some of the fucking pressure off him, these, you know, the abuse off him, he was not interested. He felt like there's absolutely no way I'm participating in this shit. By this time, it was the beginning of 1980. Stephen had been missing for 7 years now.
Wow.
He was 14. And he told Kenneth that he was not going to help him get a child. But on top of the sexual abuse, Kenneth was also physically abusive to Stephen. And he would try to strong arm him into helping with an abduction. Jeez. They would go to the mall together, and Kenneth would point out small children that piqued his disgusting fucking interests. And he would tell Stephen to go over there and try to lure them back to him. So Stephen said that he would pretend to be on board, but he would intentionally fuck things up to spare the kids. He said that he would walk up to the kids and say things like, "Have you seen my mom?" And the kid would be like, "What the fuck?"
Nice.
No, and shake his head. And then he would come back and be like, "Mom, he said no, sorry." Yeah. Unfortunately, though, one of Stephen's friends from school did not share the same moral compass as Stephen. And Kenneth was able to talk Randall Sean Poorman, who went by Sean, into helping him get a young boy.
Jesus. How do you convince, well, I mean, they're kids, well, essentially, that you're convincing, I guess.
At first, he would give some bullshit story about wanting to be a father again, but he said, like, "I want to give them a good life." And then Sean was like, "Well, why don't you just adopt a kid?" Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, they probably wouldn't approve you in this fucking dump, but whatever. And so then instead of, like, trying to reason with him some more, Kenneth would be like, "Do you want me to give you money and drugs?" And the kid was like, "That sounds better than whatever this fucking bullshit was that you were about to say."
And that'll do it.
So the two went out driving together, and they drove, and they spotted 5-year-old Timothy White out walking by himself.
Hmm.
It was February 14th.
Oh, my God.
Valentine's Day in 1980. Timmy had walked halfway home with a friend, but the two had split ways, and he only had about a block until he got home.
Is that crazy?
Fucking insane.
Okay, okay, good.
Insane. Right. I let my kids play out front of my house by themselves, and that's only if Olivia's with them and she's 8.
Yeah.
And it's only if I can see them from the windows.
Yeah.
If they decide to venture into a place where I can't see them from the windows, mm-hmm. all hell will break loose.
I understand.
So.
I got you.
Okay. And I live at the end of a dirt road. There's no one.
Yeah.
I got you. And if there's someone, then they're suspicious as fuck. So, Ken and Sean slowed down beside Timmy. This is awful, sorry. And tried to get him into the car. But Timmy was smart, and he was afraid, and he started to run. But Sean chased him down and was obviously easy. He was 14-year-old to a 5-year-old. Yeah. So he caught him, and he threw him into the back of the car. When Stephen arrived home from school that day, he saw this terrified, clearly drugged child, because Jeez. Timmy had been so scared that they put sleeping pills into fruit punch and gave it to him to sedate this poor, scared little baby.
No shit.
This was a nightmare for Stephen to walk in on. Ken had finally done it. He had taken another kid who he was going to absolutely torture for years. When he saw Kenneth, Ken said to him, "Happy Valentine's Day. Here's your new little brother."
Wow. I know, so stupid to say. What a psycho.
So, like, insane. Like, insane. Waste of fucking space.
Yeah. Wow.
So They dyed Timmy's hair from the light blonde that it was originally to dark brown. And Stephen watched Ken like a hawk. He did not want to see him lay one single hand on this child. At this point in time, Kenneth had gotten a job working the graveyard shift as a security guard for the Palace Motel, which doesn't sound like very palace-y.
Yeah, I know. You have to call the palace?
So Stephen knew what he needed to do. He needed to get Timmy the fuck out of that, if you can call it a house. Mm-hmm. Stephen himself had run away once before, but believing that his family essentially was no longer, he had nowhere to go.
Right.
So he just ran away and then he ran back to Kenneth. But this time he was determined to get Timmy back to his family. Even if it meant that he would be homeless and constantly on the run because he would fear Ken would come and kill him once he had realized what he'd done.
It's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And on March the 1st of 1980, and what Stephen would later call my do or die moment, he decided that he would take Timmy and run. And of course, this had to be the day that as he was about to walk out the door for his graveyard shift, Kenneth turned around to Stephen and said, I feel like I'm forgetting something. I might be back. Fuck you.
Jeez.
So as soon as he felt comfortable enough that Kenneth was not coming back, Stephen took Timmy and he left that shithole and never looked back.
Wow.
And on that note, we're going to end this episode.
I hate you so much. It's just getting good.
We will pick back up next week. And if you're on our Patreon, you should have both episodes by now.
Nice.
If you would like to join our Patreon, please do go to patreon.com and we're under Everything Scary Pod. Next week, we're going to go over the entire escape. What happens to Timmy? What happens to Stephen? What happens to Ken Purnell?
It was super spoiler on Ken. Burning in hell.
So how is the Yosemite Park serial killer directly linked to this case? And in case you do not know the case at all, the serial killer has absolutely nothing to do with Kenneth Purnell.
Oh.
It has to do with Stephen. And the serial killer and Stephen will forever be linked. There's so much more, you guys. I'm almost sure I can finish this in two episodes, and I did. So,
wow, what a hook!
It's going to be another full-ass meaty episode next time.
Nice.
So until then, goodbye. Bye.